Hi, everyone. Welcome to the TimingResearch.com Crowd Forecast News, episode number 203 for November 12, 2018. We are broadcasting live from live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, but you can also listen to the audio-only podcast version of all episodes of the shows now on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Just search for Timing Research and subscribe. But if you're watching the video, you should be seeing the PDF version of this week's report on your screen right now while I'm talking, or you can also go to TimingResearch.com/reports to find this or any of the past reports there. I have Dave Landry back to moderate today, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, thank you, Dave Cosmeter, and thanks to Time and Research, Crowd Forecasting News, for having me back once again. I appreciate the privilege to be here. We got two veterans here today on Veterans Day, by the way.
Yeah.
Veteran, a veteran of the show, but are you a veteran?
Captain, U.S. Marine Corps, Semper Fi.
Well, thank you for your service very much. How about you, Jim?
No, I'd born on the right day, I guess. I don't know. Too young for Vietnam. Too young for Vietnam, too old for Desert Storm. So that's, I guess, the sweet spot, you know.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. All right. Well, good. At least we have one veteran on today, and both of you guys veterans of the show. Good to see you both again today. John, let's go to you first. For those of us who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about MadHedgeFundTrader.com.
Well, my name is John Thomas. The company is MadHedgeFundTrader.com. We do a global long-short macro strategy that covers stocks, bonds, commodities, energy, precious metals, foreign currencies, and real estate. I've been publishing Diary of a Mad Hedge Fund Trader for 11 years now. Have about 6,000 followers in 137 countries. We have Global Trading Dispatch. We have the Mad Hedge Hot Tips, the Mad Hedge Technology Letter, and the business is growing gangbusters. So far this year, we are up 34%, and that's against a Dow average that's up maybe zero as of today. You can find us at www.madhedgefundtrader.com.
John, I'm curious, what's your holding period on your investments?
You know, we usually do it anywhere from a week to a month. We largely are playing the monthly options expiration cycle. Occasionally we go out to 3 months, but one of our goals is to capture the accelerated time decay in option plays where we've done a huge amount of fundamental research and are 90% confident on the short-term direction in the stock.
Gotcha. Okay.
And we have a success rate of about 90% on our trade alerts.
And your net short those options usually?
We do call spreads, put spreads. So we'll buy one and sell one farther out of the money. And this morning we just bought Amazon and sold short the TLT. And we also sold short Tesla right at the opening this morning.
Oh, cool. Well, we'll at the end of the show, we'll get to a trade of the week. So start thinking about something you might want to throw out as a little bit of a bonus.
We sold short Tesla, Jim, let's go. And then bought the car.
Did you really?
Yeah, getting a new high-performance Model X on Saturday.
Oh, cool. Is that a coupe or a four-door?
That's the SUV with the gull-wing doors.
Oh, wow. Does it have, is that a single transmission? I mean, a single gear, or does it have gears?
It's a single gear. They don't have a transmission.
Okay. Gotcha.
One of the ways they save money.
A lot of torque. I didn't save too much money on that.
Yeah, 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds. We have to carry air sick bags in the car.
In an SUV. That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, Jim. I hadn't forgotten about you over there. Jim Kinney.
I like the banter about the Tesla car. That's good. That's good banter, you know. As far as optionprofessor.com, I provide the content for them and have for decades. And basically, at the core is to try to educate people on how to use the options effectively. When stocks are way overdone on the upside, using the collar strategy has been very, very effective. And obviously, those who don't understand it, you know, we have a podcast every Friday that people can get the link to, and they can keep updated on what we're doing as far as stocks, bonds, interest rates, the dollar, and also commodities such as gold, etc. So that's what I do. And every week we have the podcast. So that's basically what I invite people to jump on so they can keep abreast of what I'm doing.
Okay, cool. Okay. I'll meet Dave Landry here from DaveLandry.com. I've been trading for a very long time. I stopped counting after 20 something years. I did spend about 14 years working with a hedge fund during that and three books on trading. And I'll just share the screen real quick. And if you want to get them for free, you could go to this link right here. Hopefully it's showing up. DaveLanner.com/CFN for Crowd Forecast News. And then also, given the nature of the market, I'm going to add in a micro market timing course and some of those things I'm going to talk about when we get to the market. I think it's very important. So put your name in there, get to know me first. And then I also have a trading service and some other things. I have a new members area with a learning management system. It's really great review so far. So I'm really, it's not just a gee whiz. It seems like people are actually getting something out of it. So that's kind of exciting for me. But I am a nerd. Anyway. All right, John, let's go to you first on the question number one. What direction do you think the S&P index will move from today's open, obviously, until Friday's close? And then go ahead and answer number two to that, and then developing events we'll get to in just 1 second. But rate your confidence in your answer to the question by estimating the probability that you have correctly predicted this week's market move.
I think on the week, on Friday, we will be up on the week. Right now, we are retesting the recent lows. I think they'll hold, and then we'll go up to new highs by the end of the year. So whether the short cover starts today at the close, tomorrow, or Wednesday is anybody's guess. But I'm betting that we're up on the week, and I'll be buying every day until we hit bottom, scale in with another major long position, you know, this week to run into year end.
Do you, as a general statement, do you tend to be a little contra in nature, or like I'm a trend follower and some people call
me? Yeah, I'm the opposite.
You're the opposite. Okay.
In my contrary, in my trading style, I'm contrary personally as an individual. Never held a job longer than about 10 years. So we have our own batch of market indicators, and you know, when things get extremely oversold, like we're approaching now, we are buyers. And you know, when they get overbought, like Tesla was up until Friday, Tesla is just coming off a 100-point rally, then we sell.
Yeah, well, maybe Musk will do a podcast and smoke a joint and have some whiskey and help you out again.
So. Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that. I'm sure you remember that. Yeah. Did you give me a percentage? Give us a percentage on that, John?
Yeah, I'd say I'm 70% confident on
70%.
That.
70%, okay.
The only way it would be wrong is if new macro events come out, we declare war on somebody, we attack somebody, you know, something unforeseen, like, you know, Apple saying, or Apple supplier saying that their facial recognition chips have dropped 30% in forward orders. That's what's killing off the market today. So those things can happen. We put enough space in our option spreads to allow for a couple of big surprises, and we still make money.
Gotcha. From your favorite person, huh? Yeah, he didn't get that. Okay. Jim, let's go to you. And then, sorry about that. I said either that or tweet from your favorite person. Am I cutting out?
Again, you're cutting out.
Okay. Okay, Jim, if you could hear me, same question, up or down for the market.
Yep. Yeah, I got you.
Rate your confidence.
We opened at 27.75. So obviously you already got an edge if you think it's going to drop, right? And I think there is a lot of things going on underneath 2,700 on the S&P that might drag us down a little bit. Now, the big thing this week that people aren't talking about is there's a lot of retail earnings coming out. Macy's, Walmart, Home Depot tomorrow. And so if that news were to be somewhat positive and their guidance wasn't terrible, you know, that could be helpful to turn this thing around a little bit. So from today's open, I think you'd be fortunate to get back to sea level. And there is an outside chance if these guys announce things that are not so great, that they could try to press it a little bit further under 2,700. So I would say from 2,775
for the retailers are high anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But again, the guidance and stuff like that. You know, I go into some of the retail stores. They're already really trying to get the Christmas going. I don't know if that's smart retailing or a little bit of desperation. I don't know which. But you know, there's a lot of backdrop that's not so great now. You know, the housing market is certainly not cooking, and you know, this tariff thing has certainly not been been helpful. And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. And, the, you know, the Fed is not hiking rates all that high. They're just hiking it at all. And they're looking for reasons. You know, when things get overbought, they come back down. You know, Amazon's a great company, but at 2050, with the moving average at 1500, you don't have to go to Harvard to figure out that thing's coming down, because 500 points above your moving average is like the poster child of overbought. So now, you know, if there's one area that looks like it might have be some interesting as you go into the end of the month, is the Chinese stocks, which obviously have been banged down hard, and they're getting 20 to 30% under their 200-day moving average. You get a decent handshake out of that meeting in the G20, and there could be some value in Chinese stocks like Baba down here, as long as it can hold that 52-week low of 130. But, you know, that is interesting to me on an oversold condition, but maybe not just yet.
So I have a question for you. If Amazon was 500 points over its moving average, do you then buy it down 600 or 700 points?
Well, what you do is you start looking at where there could be value. Certainly, it's a lot better value here than it was at 2050. Yeah. But it went through its 200-day average like a knife through butter. And again, you know, if retail is going to have some type, the thing that made me very sober on Amazon is I looked at their market cap and I looked at their revenues. And their revenues were about half of Walmart, but their market cap was three times the size of Walmart. And with my basic math skills, I figured that's overvalued. So the bottom line is, if retail were to slow down, if the consumer ever pulls back because his house is not going up anymore, or whatever reason he does, you know, again, you know, Amazon's not going to be immune to that.
Right. But is the future with Amazon or Walmart?
Well, the future is with Amazon, but at 100 times earnings, you know, you better be running like, like Bolt, if you're going to keep that pace. In other words, you know, Amazon's problem is not that it's not making money or that it's not a great company. Their problem is they have a very high valuation, and they, with very, very attractive numbers every single time they talk, because their valuation is extremely high, you know, compared to the other retailers.
Yeah, so those are the problem all with Amazon valid is, arguments not to buy the stock at $10 in 2009.
Well, that's a come line bet, and sometimes come line bets work out. And like I say, it isn't at $10 anymore. So talking about $10 is kind of like talking about, you know, it's like talking about the beans in China. So, you know, I mean, you got a 200-day moving average of 1684. It went back above it, and all of a sudden it's back underneath it. The 50-day average is at 1853. You know, if it started to get above some other numbers, you know, I'd rather buy something that's going north if I'm going to be going north than buying a bunch of stuff that's going south and thinking I'm going to be the guy who stops the water from coming in the house. So, you know, yeah. My philosophy is more from momentum trading and follow the trend than it is to, you know, catch the falling knives. Hey, listen, this is a great company. It could stop here. Retail sales could start jamming. They could shake hands at the G20 meeting and lift some tariffs or moderate tariffs. And this baby could get right back on the bicycle. And this is the neighborhood. You're right. 1500 where it hit on this drop recently. That's the neighborhood where it should have stopped. So you got a line in the sand. You want to take a shot at Amazon, you take it right here. And if it starts breaking under 1450, you admit mistake. That's how I would see it.
I will agree with you. If there is a deal on China, I'd be a better buyer of Alibaba than Amazon. Having said that, there isn't going to be any deal with China until Donald Trump leaves office.
Well, they got tariffs at 10%. So maybe he says we're not going to go to the 25% that January was supposed to have. That could be enough to take the, you know, to take all these people that are short these Chinese stocks, where they're 30% underneath their 200-day average, and get them to pop it. So there could be a trading opportunity in BABA if, if they do some moderate, you know, handshaking. Again, yeah, like you say, this guy is like virulent against doing that. But, you know, maybe the Dow at 2,600 and or the S&P at 2,600, and maybe the slowdown in some of the other economic activities, you know, maybe somebody pulls his coat and says, you know, politically, this would be a good idea. You love the stock market going up, don't you, Donnie? So why don't you just shake hands at least and make people think you got a deal going, so you can get your scorecard back up? And he would buy that.
By the way, I think you'd be out of your mind to be short China at these levels.
I think that's been one of the problems that from day one is they took credit for the administration was taking credit for the stock market. And that's a very dangerous thing.
Yeah,
to do.
It works on the upside, not so well on the downside.
Not so well on the downside. Yeah. Well, good to see you guys disagree a little bit. One of the complaints about the show is there's no controversy. So that's good to see you again.
Well, you know,
disagree.
When the market was going up practically every day and we were all long, you're not going to get a lot of controversy. That was true, until
John's got a great point. I mean, if you want to buy a better value, you know, 1600 area is a much better value than 2050. But, you know, people do like to have some line in the sand sometimes. And I think this 1450, 1500 area should be pretty much as bad as it gets if this thing is going to turn around.
Yeah, those are exactly the strikes on our call spread.
Yeah.
I put it on just before this show.
Yeah, this is, you know, you could take a shot at it down here because it is discounted and things do turn around. But again, you know, and it might be overdone here. I mean, it already fell $600 almost. I mean, that's certainly taking a lot of air out of the balloon, right?
Yeah, so, for sure.
You know, but again, if I buy it at 17 or 1800 on its way to 2200, I'm not a loser either.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and if I cut out, you guys let me know if I cut out and I'll just, I can change connections really quick. But I'm going to go ahead and answer all three questions so you guys can think about developing events. I think you've kind of touched upon a few already. As far as up or down, I'm going to go ahead and say down for the market. And I just like to keep things simple. And we broke down, obviously, from the highs in October. And I think this whole thing has been a retrace. And I actually call that a witch hat. It looks like an upside down witch's hat. And when you get a little peak like this, and it sort of stalls out that previous peak like it did almost in a textbook fashion. It wants to come down, at least test the old.
Hey, Dave, you cut out again.
Yeah, he's gone.
All right.
Well, do you want to proceed until he re-engages?
Yeah. So what do you like? What is your posture on the market right here? Are you long, short, or neutral?
Yeah, Ford company?
For the market in general or any
specific company? My feeling on the market in general is that this drop that we had was of no surprise to me because of the overbought condition that most stocks were in, especially the high valued stock. So now what I think we've seen is obviously a lot of the froth getting out of the market, right? And all the moving averages, you're either above them a little bit, like on Apple, or you've broken through them, and now we're trying to find an equilibrium. You know, I'm watching this VIX very carefully, and it's not a bad little thing to put into your soup if you're trying to figure out where the markets are going. I think if it's above 20 like it is now, it's a little bit dangerous that we could get a pop to the downside. If we go between 15 and 17, it's a reasonable stable market. And if we get underneath 15 on the VIX, then I think you can hold stocks and feel pretty good about them. So again, the VIX to me, there's three levels there that I watch very closely. I think your worst case scenario is you're in a trading range of maybe with the lows 2500, 2600, and then the highs of 2850, 2950. I think you could be in a trading range. If you're in a trading range, John, and you're buying this big dip, and we go back to the upper end of the trading range, there's money to be made. So that's not a terrible idea. But I think if you're looking for the highs to get taken out and things like that, you know, then I think it's a rougher racket. I'm looking at a few stocks that you know, are holding up pretty well. Prudential Financial is holding up pretty well, even though stocks like Goldman Sachs, I don't know what they're telling me. They just made 52-week lows today. So I don't know what that's telling me, but it's certainly not positive news. And then, of course, the drugs like Pfizer seems to be holding up pretty good, and they pay a decent dividend. And then Chevron seems to be hanging in there pretty well, even though the oil sector has been volatile. So those are three stocks that that seem to be, you know, either holding up well or appreciating, while a lot of people are getting hurt with stock drops, you know?
Yeah, well, I agree with your range scenario. You know, our range is 2,600 in the S&P 500 up to maybe, 2,850 or 2,900. I think we're putting in a very long-term head and shoulders top, which will define the end of the bull market. And by the way, it'll end right around the age of 10 years. I'm looking for the things finally to collapse around March or April next year. Then it'll be exactly 10 years old. Then you basically play the short side for 2 years.
I think you're absolutely right. Or what you do is for your gains you've been able to accumulate, you start rolling over some of the income producing kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, and ranges, by the way, are your most profitable market scenarios, because then you have really well-defined bottoms to trade against from the long side, really well-defined tops to trade against from the short side. You know, we went 100% long in technology stocks on October 29th, and within five trading days, we were out. We were completely out. We went to 100% cash, missed this complete meltdown of the last 3 days, and now we're starting to scale back again on the long side, again in technology.
Yeah. Well, of course, technology got hit pretty hard, and like I say, a lot of these companies, you know, were overbought, and so the overbought condition has been taken off the table. You know, there's a lot of potentially good news, and some people think this week is going to be the worst case scenario on the pullback here, and then basically things like the seasonal activity November to April is going to kick in. The after the midterms, history is quite positive. Buybacks are supposed to hit a record level here in November, and the tariffs, you know, if they have any kind of moderation in November, you know, these are all things that could be very good tailwinds. You know, having said that, I would prefer to see a little bit of momentum resume in the market rather than just predict that, you know, the dam will hold. So if I was suggesting to people last week's highs, when last week's highs are exceeded, then you may have a pretty good green light that all these scenarios we're talking about that are bullish may actually be in the cards.
Yeah, right.
You know,
well, don't forget, there's a major uncertainty that's been lifted off the market, and that's the midterms.
Right.
You know, the midterms kept the markets inside a range for 10 months.
Right.
And we traded against that range very successfully.
Right.
So now we're defining a 5-month range, and you can make a ton of money on that too. Also, there's $200 billion worth of stock buybacks that have to hit the market by the end of the year.
Right.
You have a lot of window dressing effects where companies sell their losers and buy their winners to look good, to, you know, con you into buying their mutual fund.
Right.
So there's, and then like you said, the, you know, the sell in May go away. Well, the flip side of that is you buy in November and hold until April. You know, the seasonals are very strong this time of the year. So I'd be using all these big dips to cover all these shorts if you have them, and look to go long. I mean, that's where the smart money is going to be made over the next couple of months.
It seems like that's the case. You know, like I say, I would feel better if some of these things like last week's high get taken out and we get that VIX under 15. I think the probabilities of what you just said would go up dramatically. Right now, I think the scenario you're describing makes sense, but having some price evidence backing it up would not be a negative.
Yeah, and also, like I said, you know, the market's down 500 points right now. Their natural instinct is to sell when it's down that much. You have to train yourself to do the reverse. Making money in the markets is an unnatural act. You have to do the opposite of what your, you know, genetic emotions force you to do. So down 500 to me means buy. I mean, you only consider buying. You're only looking for cheap stuff. You're only looking for stuff that's testing bottoms. And the flip side is true when it's up 500. You're only looking at sell ideas. Don't even think about buying when the market's up 500.
Yeah, and this $500 drop is not coming from the all-time high. It's coming off of a rebound rally. And so it's a different 500-point drop than it would be if we were at 2950 on the S&P.
It's coming off a resistance point that was natural for the market to fail at, even if it's still in an uptrend. It had to test there, fail once, and go back and try it again. So that's what's going to happen.
And there is some gap stuff underneath the 2700 mark. That's why I thought we might visit that neighborhood before it does turn around.
Yeah,
and another constructive thing is the transports had not been getting hit too bad. Let's see how they're doing right now.
Yeah, we're basically trading both sides of an air pocket here from 2725 to 2850 in the spies.
Right.
So you got to make that work for you.
Yeah, I mean, the formation that I'm kind of looking for, if you want to be bullish, is we made a one move last week on the big rally. We're having a two move down here. We certainly don't want to take out last week's lows or last month's lows. And if we don't take out last month's lows and we take out last week's highs, now you've got a 1-2-3 formation that historically has a pretty good percentage of being correct.
Yeah, like nearly 100%. David, why don't you move on to the next question? We can talk about that.
You guys, like when I left, you guys were arguing and we came back, y'all started agreeing. So that was kind of interesting.
Oh, well, the time you were gone, the market dropped 500 points. It started a whole new discussion.
You were asking me about whether I was short or not. And I'm net short. I do have an IPO, which I think you trade contra to the market. I do have an energy stock, which I think you trade contra to the market. But other than that, I am net short. I do own some puts. The 50-day moving average I was talking about earlier has a downward slope, pretty serious downward slope. 200-day moving average, believe it or not, also has a downward slope. So we could get the death cross. The death cross in and of itself isn't a big deal. But if you go back and study them, not on a mechanical basis, but if you look at what happens afterwards, in case I cut out, by the way, I'm going to say down with a 60% confidence for this week. But if you go in and look at the death cross, it's the magnitude of what happens after the signal or any other sales signal for that matter, and not the signal in and of itself traded on a mechanical basis. One thing that I wanted to point out is this is a weekly chart from last week. It's going to look a little worse with today's data in it. But you can see this is what I call my bow tie moving averages. You have a 10 simple, a 20 exponential, and a 30 exponential. When they come together and spread out quickly in what I call a bow tie fashion, looks like a bow tie. And if we take a look at the weekly S&P, every major bull and bear market will have this weekly signal in it. You can see in 2007, we had a weekly signal. And then in 2000, we had a weekly signal down. And then you had corresponding buys in 2003. And the one in 2009 was a little late to the game, but it did occur. Now, there was one little whipsaw in here in 2015-16, but the market did sell off about 8 or 9% from that, maybe a little bit more. I know the Russell 2000 was down about 18%. And as you guys know, for all intents and purposes, the media considers, for whatever reason, a bear market 20%. So that was a pretty serious signal. Now, we did have a daily sell signal here, and you can see it right here. And then it's just one or two things, just real quick, I want to show you guys. One thing that I was looking at when I try to come up with very simple systems, and one thing I was thinking is, if a market's going to drop 50%, it's going to drop 10% first. So I came up with a simple little system, and it looks to sell after a market drops 10% and closes below the 50-week moving average. And then there's a slight little whipsaw filter on the upside to keep it from going in and out a lot. But it's pretty amazing the way it works. We have not hit that signal yet in the S&P 500. Now, I'm kind of rushing through this, but this is all in that market timing course I mentioned recently. So right here, you can see we almost saw a sell signal back here, and that was back in April. And then we almost saw one really close just recently. So if we take out this recent low, we'll probably have a sell signal on this. And not that there's any guarantee there's going to be a major bear market afterwards, but all bear markets will have a sell signal. Now, not every sell signal will turn into the mother of all bear markets, but I think it pays to pay attention. So if we see this trigger, if we see that bow tie on a weekly trigger, I think it'd be very smart to get out of the way. I'm not saying it's not going to have these huge retrace rallies in between that we've seen so far. I'm just saying that it might be smart to get out of the way and stop being a longer term bull. It's like, I'm starting to see some of these mutual fund companies put out emails, and they said that what we're seeing now is just sector rotation. Well, you look at some of these sectors, and it pretty much all sectors look like the market itself. They've imploded, had a bit of a retrace, and now it looks like they're imploding again. So I'm not sure, are they transferring out of crappy sectors into less crappy sectors, or I'm not sure exactly what's going on. So everybody who looks smart for the last, I think John says we're almost 10 years now, everybody who looks smart for the last 9 years is not going to look that smart anymore. Don't confuse brains with a bull market. Now, keep in mind, I'm 100% technical trader. I don't worry about the economy or earnings or anything like that. I just look at the charts, and right now it looks like we're in trouble. And so far, we just retraced one last point. I don't know if I got cut out or not, but this is what I call a witch's hat. It's just when you have a sharp retrace to a prior pivot point. And I did hear you guys talking about this level here, 2800 or 2825, whatever that is. That would be an inflection point. If we got above that, I'd feel a little bit better about this market. But for now, I think we're still in trouble. And I think you guys were talking about the prior lows. We might go down and test those, but I'm a one day at a time kind of guy and a trend follower. But for now, I think this market looks like it's in a lot of trouble. Long term, it hasn't come apart just yet, but I think it's, what's the old saying? When the fat lady sings, she might be, she's not singing just yet, but I think she's warming up. So I don't know. I think you guys were talking a little bit when I had to step out to fix the connection, but did you guys discuss developing events, which was question number three?
No, let's go ahead with that.
All right, John, for your answer to number one, please share what specific reasons you think the S&P will be headed the direction you choose. And I think you were a little bit on the bullish side.
Yeah, on a five-day view, I'm bullish.
Okay.
You know, I think we test the downside that we made 2 weeks ago. It holds, and then we get a short cover rally going into Friday, and then next week is Thanksgiving. So that slows way down. There isn't really any other big data points to hit this week. It's a slow data week from the government, and also the government is closed today, so we have no data today because of Veterans Day.
Okay. Well, I think if that gap gets taken out, it could get. I think psychologically, everybody's watching that gap. At least the technical guys are. I think it could be support, but if it gets taken out, I would be a little bit more concerned. Jim, do you have any discussion on developing events? Question four.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dave. That 26.75 gap is like a magnet to the market right now. So I would be surprised if it turned around before filling that in. And again, like I was saying, a couple of things is the earnings. So tomorrow we got Home Depot and some pot stocks like Tilray. Wednesday you've got Cisco and you got Macy's and Canopy, another pot stock. And then Thursday you got Walmart and you've got Nvidia, which is already being sold off in advance. Applied Materials, which is being sold off in advance. And so there is some news coming from some stocks that might change things a little bit. And again, basically the buybacks that are supposed to show up in November at a record pace, according to some. And of course, some other seasonal factors like the midterms. After the midterms, historically, the market does well. And then, of course, the November to April timeframe is positive. So there is some positive offsetting penalties here. But right now, if you are following the momentum, it is giving it up and rolling over. And the question is it going to stop and turn around? You know, on a macro thing, you know, where you're talking about, will this be a big market decline? You know, I always try to look out there, and I did this in prior years, like .com was obviously a big red flag. And then real estate leveraged loans were a very big red flag. Right now, you know, in the debt market, again, you've got leveraged loans with a tremendous amount of capital going in there, and you got high yield with very dodgy covenants. And so if you wanted to know where a black swan could come from, you know, if the credit markets got tight and liquidity dries up, and obviously the Fed is draining liquidities, right? So, if people all wanted to get rid of their leveraged loans and their CLOs and their high yield bonds, you know, anybody knows anything about those, the liquidity on those are very dodgy because people already own them. So if they started to drop, they wouldn't want to buy more of these things. They'd want to get the hell out. And who's going to be on the other side of the trade? You're all in, you know? So if everyone's in and everyone wants to get out, I've been in this game for decades. That ain't good. And if you want to know where the black swan might come from, I think it's leveraged loans and high yield.
Yeah, exchange traded funds is one of the biggest structural risks to the market. You know,
that's
$3.5 trillion outstanding, 3,500 ETFs out there, more ETFs than the number of listed stocks in the stock market. And we know that when, you know, markets turn south, the bids for these just completely disappear. So whether the stop loss limits on ETFs actually work going forward, that'll be a good big question overhanging the market. You know, the big ones like the SPY will be okay, but there are literally hundreds of small illiquid ETFs out there, which will have to close.
Right. The other sneaky Pete out there is the value of the US dollar, which made a 52-week high today. So the value of the dollar going up obviously creates another factor. And if it pops to 100 from the 97.5 area, you know, that could be an issue for some stocks as well. But the dollar is very sneakily going up to new highs here. Whether it's going to sustain or not, I don't know. But the yield differential between the U.S. and the rest of the country, that rest of the world is so huge. It is attracting capital, no doubt about it.
It'll continue to go up as long as U.S. interest rates go up and the Fed is promised us, that goes on for at least another 9 months. So don't go long any of the currencies here, the euro, the yen, the yuan, anything. It's going to be a strong dollar market for at least 6 more months.
Is the yuan still tied to the dollar?
Say again?
In the yuan still tied to the dollar?
Somebody's cutting out. I'm not getting the whole question.
Is the yuan still tied to the dollar?
No, they broke that link a long time ago. It's been basically managed by the Chinese Central Bank for several years now. And okay. By the way, the Chinese yuan is at a 10-year low. Basically, gotcha. China's devaluing the currency to offset the cost of the new U.S. import duties. And so far, that's been working. There's not much the U.S. can do to stop it. It's not like we can ban their imports or anything.
They're not stupid.
That card's already been played.
Yeah, they're not stupid. John, while we have you, let's go ahead and go to the next question. And it's a question of the week. What do you think are the main reasons why most traders are not successful and consistent? What could the average trader do to improve consistency?
Well, you know, it's really easy. They buy high and sell low. You know, I've been watching this for 50 years. I've been trying to educate people on how to trade the markets for 40 years. They lack discipline. You need to develop an iron discipline and stick to it, you know, back test it, make sure it works historically, and then just stick to that no matter what. That's what I do, and I lose money. You know, I have a stop loss discipline. The second, you know, a position has a 10% loss, I'm out of there. You know, I know that 90% of the time my next trade is going to go a winner. So the way I look at it is it's stopping out as a way of moving me on to the next winner faster. I get emails every day that kind of go like, well, I bought Lam Research at the highs. It's now down 40%. What should I do? I get that question every day. And the answer is you should have stopped out when Lam had the first 10% drop.
As do I.
Because you never know everything about what's going on all the time. There's always a risk that, you know, there's a reason will come out 3 months later as to why you should have sold Lam three months ago. And the obvious answer on that one is global semiconductor demand slowdown.
Well, you and I are polar opposites. Like I said earlier, we don't have controversy on the show. That's one of the complaints. However, sounds like reversion to the mean, but at least you're using a stop and you have a money management plan in place. My big complaint with, but problem with a lot of reversions to the mean people is they tell you don't use stops. And as I often say, that'll work until it don't sooner or later. Let me ask you real quick. So how do you avoid the black swan event? Is that worked into your system through a spread or something? What are you doing there, John?
You know, we have embedded hedges in every position we have. For every call option we're long, we're short another call option. I go to bed every night expecting the market to be up or down 1,000 points the next day. And I stress test my portfolios in advance. So anything big that happens, we live to fight another day. I think on the last 1,000 point down day, which was about 3.5 years ago, we were down 8% on the day. We made back all of that money within a week. So on top of that, I try to balance out long positions with short positions. That adds another level of protection to your portfolio. So today we bought Amazon. It's right around our break-even point, but we shorted Tesla, and that immediately dropped $20. So that also works. And we've been running our model portfolios for Matt Hitch from Trader for 11 years, and we've never had a drawdown bigger than 8% in any one day, and we're up 312% over the same 10-year period. So it's just taking a lot of the disciplines I learned as a hedge fund trader and applying them to our trade alert service.
Gotcha. Hey, Jim, how about you? What do you think are the main reasons why most traders are not successful and consistent? And what could the average trader do to improve consistency?
Well, I think, using the moving averages, I think, are very important because they're based on price and time. They're nobody's opinion. They're not going to be affected by the weather or whatever. You know, they're just price and time. So I think the moving averages are very valuable. Then I believe when you get very far away from these moving averages, then you look for a chart formation that might be indicating exhaustion in the direction. So basically, if you're way overbought, you'd probably look at the chart to see where there's a higher high surrounded by lower highs, and then you might instigate some of your position, that would be going back down towards the mean if it was an overbought thing. And then, of course, put a stop in or buy some type of an option as a hedge so you don't have, any naked risk of it going against you. So I like the idea of the moving averages. for trend following, but I also like to get an idea within the trend of overbought, oversold. That's number one. Number two is I think you've got to manage your bankroll, which is basically what John was saying, as far as having some type of offsetting situation. That's why when markets go way up, like the Amazon example, I'm suggesting people investigate the collar strategy, where you can still stay in the market by selling an out-of-the-money call, but you take that premium and you buy your insurance. If the market goes in the toilet, you've offset all that risk to the downside to speak of, not all of it, but as much as your strike price will allow. And if it just goes sideways, both of them offset each other. And if it goes up, you can either get called away at the higher level or you can roll the call up. A lot of things to learn. That's why at the end of the broadcast, I'm going to let people know how they can go to my podcast every Friday and get more acquainted with this, and also contact me by email with any specific questions.
Yeah. Another thing I tell people is work in, profit out. You know, a lot of people sign up for these newsletter trade alert services looking for a get rich quick scheme, something they can, you know, make money quickly on with no work. They don't exist. I'm sorry. I've been looking myself for 50 years and they don't exist. The more money, the more time you put into doing the work, the research, the analysis, just studying basic stuff like how options work, what's a Black-Scholes equation, what are moving averages, the more money you'll take out of the market. You put an immense amount of work into the market, you will take an immense amount of profit out. I've seen, you know, hundreds of people do it. It'll work for you.
Cool. As far as the question, as far as I'm concerned, while you guys were talking, I just jogged my memory. I remembered I actually did a presentation just on this. Somebody from Brazil was interviewing me and they wanted to know why they aren't more successful traders. So here's a link. I don't know if you can see it, but it's one of my weekend charts. And I can put this in the link with the this link here, DaveLander.com/CFN. I'll put this in this link here for you guys. The bottom line is because they don't plan their trade and they don't trade their plan. I know that's a cliche, but like John said, he gets emails all the time. Hey, I'm down 40, 50%. What do I do? And I immediately tell those people, well, what was your original plan? Because obviously you didn't say, I'm going to get in this trade. And if it goes down 40, 50%, I'm just going to hold on and hope. So that's the main thing. Now, what I often tell people, the only thing you have to do to prove whether or not you can become a successful trader is to plan one trade and then trade that plan. Then you've proven that you can follow the process. And what we do is a process. And you have to, obviously, you want to study something for a while and paper trade it, but nobody does that. Everybody just jumps right in. Nobody's willing to invest in themselves. I'm not saying a get-rich-quick scheme or something like that that you see all over the internet. Some people, some of these guys even advertise on my YouTube channel and all on my videos where I'm telling everybody, don't believe these guys because it is hard work and it does take time. But if you're willing to find something simple and stick with it and prove that you could do it by doing it, plan one trade and trade the plan. And whether you're successful or not, if you follow the process, pat yourself on the back and then continue to do that. And if you could follow the process, win, lose, or draw, and then just begin to tweak things, maybe your stock selection could use a little bit of work. I heard Jim mention money management, and that's crucial. And it is very crucial. Make sure your money management is in place. You're not going to trade some of these stocks we mentioned earlier that are bouncing around 10, 15, 20 points a day with a 1 or 2 point stop. The noise alone is going to take you out of the trade. So just study a methodology, find something really simple. Linda Rasky once said, all you need is one pattern to be successful. And I fully believe her. If you look at the three books I mentioned earlier, you can get for free, just trade persistent pullbacks with TKOs. And if that's all you did, you would stay on the right side of the market. You would not have bought one stock in the entire slide from 2000 to 2000. And I'm sorry, from 2007, late 2007, early 2008, all the way down to the bottom. So very important to just follow your plan, find something simple and stick with it. Once you begin to get trading, you're going to be amazed at how easy it always was. But trading itself is not easy. Following a plan is not easy, and not getting emotional, that's difficult. But once you begin to understand how markets really work, and there's more than one way to skin a cat. Obviously, John has his own way of trading and I'm a trend follower. We're a little bit opposite. But even that gives you some information in and of itself. myself because John's probably on the other side of some of my trades, but that's okay. We both have a plan and we're both following our plan. And longer term, we know it's going to work out. He may be wrong sometimes and I may be right, but just plan your trade and trade your plan. And I know it's cliche, but that's all you have to do. I know, easier said than done. John, do you have a trade of the week you want to throw out for us?
Well, you know, I would have said short Tesla, because but it's already dropped $20. It just had a big spate of good news. Sales are meeting targets for the Tesla 3. They just got a new chairman who's now the supervising adult for Elon Musk. And the tax write-offs expire at the end of the year. So there's a huge surge of orders going through the system now in order to get the $7,500 tax credit. That created a $110 rally, you know, 40%. So that's a pretty impressive rally. And I just thought there's no way we're going to a new high right now. You know, as much as I love the stock, $110 in a month, that's good enough for me. And we put on the 430-400 vertical bear put spread and it immediately became profitable. So that was my trade of the week. On the long side, I'd be buying Amazon right here, but we're doing it through a 1450, 1500 vertical bull call spread that expires in December on December 21st. So we have room for another 10% drop in the stock and we still make money.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, Jim, do you have any, you have a trade of the week?
Well, here, I think this is a kind of a important thing. We've got a lot of bullish talk out there because of buybacks, because of the seasonality, because of what happens after the midterms. Now, bullish talk is very great, but these numbers look very not so great, right? So if you're buying into these historical things and people like that, you know, that's one way of doing it. I would like to tell people to whatever the highs were last week, like give you an idea on Home Depot, it went to about 190. Now it's pulled back to 183. The low was 170. If you start taking out 190, okay, that to me would give me the 1-2-3 formation and would give me some evidence that maybe some of these bullish things that we're talking about that clearly have history on their side may actually come into play. You don't have to be the first guy at the party to have a good time. So the point being is that I would use last week's rebound high as a line in the sand. And when and if we get above last week's high in some of the stocks that you're looking at, then you might have a better chance, probability-wise, that these bullish things we're talking about will come to pass. So
yeah, you got to remember, it's the second mouse that gets the cheese.
That's it.
Yeah, I like that, though. I like that.
And that the pioneers are the ones who end up with all the arrows
in their back. Yeah, I use those all the time.
Besides that, those are old Morgan Stanley trading expressions.
Very good.
So anyway, that would be my suggestion is because obviously there's people out there who are either underwater on things that they're holding, or they're holding onto a lot of cash because they dumped things while they were up or dumped things when they started to break. So, you know, before I would get my party hats on, I'd like to see last week's high getting taken out on everything from the transports to the Russell to the main stocks you're looking at to some of the indexes. And then, of course, there should be plenty of real estate on the upside if all these other bullish things that we're talking about come to pass.
Gotcha. I'm going to give all my individual stocks that I was looking at coming into the day have already triggered on the short side. So I'm going to go ahead and just kind of talk from a little bit longer term perspective. Right here is a Russell 2000. You can see these moving averages coming together. And they're almost about to cross here. If that crosses and we have a higher high and a higher low, that would be a major sell signal. I would also, and then just FYI, for what it's worth, whenever you have these bow ties off of all-time highs, like right here, this thing triggered way up in the 160-somethings, way up about 164 or so last time. So if you see a weekly signal here, I would begin to get very concerned about the market. Like I said earlier, much, much longer term, the market is still okay, but it's starting to look fairly ugly. If we see a weekly bow tie down, again, if this crosses below the 10, simple crosses below 20 exponential and 30 exponential, I think it could get fairly ugly fairly quickly. So you want to pay attention to that. And like I said earlier, that little simple 10% system, watch to see if the weekly S&P 500 or any other index you want to look at closes below that 50-week moving average, and if we're more than 10% away from the all-time closing highs, I think the market could be in in a lot of trouble. And like I said earlier, all of those are in that little micro market timing system, and or I should say micro market timing course that I mentioned earlier, DaveLander.com/CFN. So if you go there, you'll get that for free and just check it out. And then also, if you watched last week's Dave Lander's The Week in Charts, which is on my homepage, DaveLander.com, you'll see that I talked about all of these systems and methods for market timing and working to stay on the right side of the market as a trend follower, that is. Okay, let's go back to you, John. Do you have any closing thoughts or anything else you want to tell us about yourself, Mad Hedge Fund Trader, the markets, forgers?
Yeah, madhedgefundtrader.com, up 34% on the year, looking to be up 42% or more by the end of the year with our existing positions. We send out about 200 to 250 trade alerts a year. Been at the game for 50 years. So please go to our website at madhedgefundtrader.com and let us teach you how to make money reliably in all market conditions.
Okay, cool. All right, Jim Kenny, any closing thoughts about yourself or about optionprofessor.com?
Yeah, optionprofessor.com does have the weekly market update. We cover everything from the stock stock market, the interest rate market, as well as the dollar and gold. You know, on the one of the things we do talk about that's, I think, important is how to protect or hedge yourself, hedge your values. With the market charts that Dave was just showing, you can see that the market has had a very, very large advance. And without knowing how to use puts and calls as a hedge, you're kind of riding out there with no parachute, with a plane that's clearly at a very high level historically. So I think it's important to learn that. And we go over that each week. As far as the interest rate market, I've been telling people for the last year, shorten your maturities, roll your treasuries, and at some point we'll extend duration. If you don't know what that means, and you look at a bond portfolio you own that's been going down, down, down all year, you could have offset that risk had you gone to the podcast where I discuss very clearly how to shorten maturity, how to roll those, and then extend maturity when and if we see some kind of a peak in the hiking process, which doesn't seem like it's in the cards right now. And then, of course, the dollar's making new highs, and the gold is trying to sustain a low point down there. So there's going to be a lot to talk about in the weeks and months ahead. If you go to optionprofessor.com, you get the link to the weekly podcast, which is free of charge. And if you go to optionprofessor@gmail.com, you can shoot over any question you might have, and I'll respond.
Okay, cool. Okay, Dave Landry from DaveLander.com here again. If you go to DaveLander.com/CFN and put your info in, I'll give you a $100 gift certificate so you can get all three of my books and get to know me. The other thing I'll do is I'll add you into the market timing course, and there's another getting started in trading course on that members area. And then since we talked about it today, why they aren't more successful traders, I'll go ahead and put this link in a list of things. If you just give me a couple hours to get that put into place, you'll get all that. Again, like I said earlier, get to know me first. And if you like what you see, then I have plenty of stuff to learn from. And I also have a new learning management system that I just rolled out recently. And so far, it seems that everybody's really, really liking that. So I'm pretty proud of it, but I am a little nerdy. Anyway, John Thomas, thank you so much. I'll let Cosbitter close things up for us. So Jim Kenny, good to see you guys again. Great little banter today. Great show, by the way, guys. So thanks for making it a great show. And Dave Cosbitter, thank you again. Thanks to Crowd Forecast News and Timing Research for having me back once again. And back to you, Dave. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. Just a reminder, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or shows. Analyze Your Trade is off tomorrow because I'm in Vegas for the Traders Expo, so I'm going to be hanging out at the show. But both shows will be back next week. So I just want to thank all my guests again for this week. Dave Landry of DaveLandry.com, John Thomas of MadHedgeFundTrader.com, and Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.